Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Shabbos daf Mem Tes. We are holding on the, I think we got to the very top of daf Mem Tes Amid Aleph. We are four lines into the page. Pizman Shehin Lachin at the two dots. Today's shir is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children. Also by the Issachar family for a refuah shleima to a dear friend, Bekarov, to Omir Aaron Ben Tzion, Yishtav Rufor Shlema Bekarov, and it's also sponsored by Hindi and Mendy Yudin and Shoshana and Aaron Tversky, Lezecher Nishmas, Hindi and Aaron's father, Rav Shlomo Shmuel Ben Harav Yaakov Yisrael Zichrona Levracha, whose Nisham also Shavna Aliyah through the Zechusava of our learning. We thank all of the sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. And again, we are holding on the top of Daf Mem Tes Amid Aleph, and the Gemara is going to continue the discussions relating to Hatmana, but we're going to talk with our Mishnah made a distinction between certain items, whether they are moist or dry, that they're only Mosif Hevel when they are moist. So the Gemara is going to talk about what kind of moisture are we discussing. Is this artificial moisture or is this natural moisture? Are these products naturally moist? Or does it even mean if it's artificially moist, if you moistened it, that it becomes something that's Mosif Hevel? Then the Mishnah is going to discuss other items that are Eino Mosif Hevel, and therefore that you're allowed to do Hatmana with, and because we're going to mention Kanfeyona as one of those items, the Gemara is going to tell us the story of Elisha Bal Knafayim, and something special about Kanfeyona, about the wings of a Yona. Then the Mishnah on the bottom of the page is going to talk about using animal hides for Hatmana, and that's going to lead us into a big discussion about which animal hides are Muktza, and the animal hides that are used for Hatmana, which animal hides we're talking about over here, and if, whether there's a difference between animal hides that belong to people who are in the business of selling hides, or whether it belongs to just regular balabatim, people who just have private ownership of it. And then on Amud Beis, about a third of the way through the page till the end, we're going to discuss where we get the notion that there are 39 melachos of Shabbos. Where does that come from? The concept that there are dafka 39, arba'im chasarachas melachos of Shabbos. So let's begin again at the top of the page, four lines from the top. Bizman Shein Lachin. So we said in the Mishnah that Teven and Zagin and Mochin and Asavin are only going to be Mosif Hevel when they are moist. So says Mari Bailuhu, Lachin Machmas Atzman Odilma Lachin Machmas Davracher. When we say moist, does that mean inherently moist that it's not because something wet had spilled on them? That would not be enough to make them Mosif Hevel. They're only Mosif Hevel because they're naturally moist? Or do we even mean that if they became artificially moist, something spilled on them, something was poured on them, that's enough to make them Mosif Hevel? And certainly Kal V'chomer if they're naturally moist. So Tashma says, well, we'll bring a Raya. The Brisa tells us, or the Mishnah says, that you're not allowed to use Lo B'Tevin, V'lo B'Zagim, Lo B'Mochin, V'lo B'Asavim, B'Zman Shein Lachin. Well, Yarm B'Shlom Lachin, Machmas Tov Aracher, Shapir. Any of these items on this list can become artificially moist because anything in the world can become artificially moist. All you need to do is wet it. Le'i amrit lachem machmas atzman. But if we're talking about something that's naturally moist, mochin lachem machmas atzman echim shkachsa. How do you have unprocessed wool that's lachen machmas hatzman? It's not a naturally moist product. So how can you say that we're talking about something that's naturally moist when one of the items on the list is unprocessed wool? So says Gemara, mimarta debeni atme. It depends where on the animal you got the wool from. If you got the wool from in between the animal's thighs, the inner thighs of the animal, where it's extremely sweaty, so then that wool is naturally moist. So it's possible to have mochin that are naturally moist. And that which Rabbi Shaya is going to tell us, that you're allowed to do Hatmana on Erev Shabbos with dry ksus and dry peros because they're not Mosif Hevel, but not with wet clothing or wet peros because those are Mosif Hevel. Where do you ever find clothing that is naturally moist? Clothing, by definition, is naturally dry. It doesn't have something that's adding moisture to it. So answers Gemara again, what did you make the clothing out of? Mimarta debeni atmi. We're talking about where you made the clothing out of the sweaty part of the wool of the animal, and therefore it is naturally moist and remains naturally moist. Didn't we already give this answer? Why couldn't the Gemara see this answer coming? So the Acharon point out that the Hava Amin over here is, the Rishonim actually point out, that the Hava Amin opinion over here is that once you weave it and you turn it into a beged, it's not that the old sweat that the animal had is no longer going to affect the material. So Kamash Mulan says the Gemara, the fact that the animal's entire life this was being saturated in sweat, that even after it goes through the processing and it becomes a beged, it's still going to affect the quality of the material and its ability to be Mosif Hevel. New Mishnah now. So again, we're continuing to discuss halachos of hatmana, and we started with, the first Mishnah was things that you're not allowed to do hatmana with. Then we moved into things that sometimes yes, sometimes no, if it's moist or if it's not moist. So now we go into things that you are allowed to do hatmana with. Tomnin b'ksus, ubeperos, b'kanfeyona, ubenesara shalcharashim, you're allowed to do hatmana with clothing or with fruits. Different types of fruits doesn't necessarily mean like apples and oranges, that wouldn't be very good for hatmana. It means like kernels of wheat and beans and things like that, and kanfeyona, the wings of a yona, the feathers of a yona. That's how Rashi says, and the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch says, and also other birds. It doesn't have to be kanfeyona. The reason we chose kanfeyona, the Mishnah Berurah explains in the name of some of the Achronim, is that kanfeyona were mitsuyin lahem. Apparently, they had more access to doves than they had to other birds. The Malbim writes that the feathers of other birds are not useful for hatmana because they're too light, so if a slight breeze comes, they'll just fly away. But kanfeyona, I guess, have more of a weight to them, and therefore are more useful as far as hatmana is concerned. So that's the idea of why Zdavka mentions kanfeyona, even though la'alacha, it means other things as well, other types of birds as well. Ubenesara shel charashim, and the trimmings that a carpenter has in his carpentry shop, the trimmings of wood that can be used for hatmana, ubna orish al pishtandaka, and little pieces of flax. When you comb the flax, the little pieces that come off, so the byproduct of flax combing also can be used for hatmana. But Rabbi Yehuda Asher is doing hatmana with daka. He is only matir with gasa. The Gemara is going to discuss what daka, what gasa. Is he going back on the orish al pishta? Is he going back on something earlier in the Mishnah? So the Gemara will elaborate on that. So once we mention kanfeyona, the Gemara gives us a little bit of agadita. Amra biyanei, tefillin tzrichin guf naki ke'elisha bal kanafayim. For a person to wear tefillin, he has to have a guf naki like Elisha bal kanafayim. Elisha bal kanafayim was, the Gemara is going to elaborate on his tzidkus, but he was someone who was expert at always keeping, who could be trusted at always keeping a guf naki. So mayhi. So what do we mean by that? You have to be a tzaddik like Elisha bal kanafayim to wear tefillin? So says Gemara, nah, not such a standard. You just have to be careful not to have bodily functions, not to pass gas in your tefillin until you remove your tefillin. So it's not that hard to keep a guf naki. The fact that it says Kalisha bal kanafayim is because Elisha was certainly someone who loved his tefillin so much, as we're about to see, was certainly very careful about all of the halachos and about bodily function in his tefillin. Rava amar shlo yishan behen, that a person just has to be careful not to sleep in his tefillin. And this also relates to bodily functions, because when a person is sleeping, he has less control over his bodily functions. So the gezeira shem yafiach is much more of a concern when a person is sleeping, or that he could even become a balkari. But while a person's awake, according to Rava, you don't have to worry so much, because a person can keep control of his body. Vamaykari le bal kanafayim. Where did Elisha get this name? This fellow Elisha get this name of bal kanafayim? So the Gemara tells us, shapamachas gozra malchus romi arusha gzeira al Yisrael. That one time the Romans made a gzeira on the Jewish people. Shekala miniach tefillin yinakras mocho. That anyone who would wear tefillin, they would crush his brain. So they would kill him. Hay Elisha menicham v'yotzei l'shuk. And Elisha bal kanafayim, in a defiant move, would wear his tefillin, and he'd go out in public wearing the tefillin. Ra'o kastarechad, and one time an officer saw him, so ratz mipanav. So Elisha was defiant, but he wasn't an idiot, right? So he ran away. He sees this kastar, he sees the police coming, so he runs away. So v'ratz acharav, they chased after him. V'kimen she'egia etzlo, once the fellow caught up with him, nitalan mirosho v'achazon biyado. He took them off of his head, and he had them in his hand, because he didn't want to get killed. the Rishonim raised the question, why didn't he want to get killed? Doesn't it become Yaharig Val Yavar if it's a Gzeres Malchus, if it's a Shas Hashmad, even a Mitzvah Kala? Is Yaharig Val Yavar the Gemara in Sanhedrin? Daf Ayin Dalit tells us, so shouldn't he keep his tefillin on? Because if they're making a Gzera Dafka against tefillin, so then it becomes Yaharig Val Yavar. So Tosus points out that that's only when you do that because of a Nachri, and it looks like you're being Motzi Atzmo Miklal Yisrael, meaning the Nachri tells you, you're not allowed to do this, and you separate yourself from the rest of Klal Yisrael. But by not wearing tefillin at a particular time, you're not really being oker yourself from Klal Yisrael, because there are lots of people at that moment in time that are not wearing tefillin. So it's only when the Gemara talks about Afila Araxa the Masani, even on the shoe straps, that Jews have a certain way of wearing their shoes. So you're Dafka not going to wear that color shoes. You're going to wear the Gaisha color shoes, so you're being motzi yourself from Klal Yisrael. But over here, you're not doing anything that overtly looks different than many, many other Jews, and therefore it's not that's why the Tosa says it's not, will not become Yaharig Val Yavar. In Chidushei Halachos, he says in the name of the Gra that he took off the tefillin because he was afraid of the zilzel to the tefillin. It wasn't to protect himself. It wasn't because he didn't want to get killed. But what's going to happen if his tefillin are going to end up on the floor if they smash his brain? And the Chassam Sofer says that he didn't want to say a lie while he was still wearing his tefillin, and he knew he was going to have to lie his way out of this situation, so he didn't want to say a sheker while he was wearing his tefillin. L'chor, it's always aser to say a lie, and it's mutter to say a lie to save your life even if you are wearing tefillin. But this higher degree of sensitivity, says the Chassam Sofer, this higher degree of sensitivity when one is wearing tefillin. So Amar Lo, so the Kastor said to him, what's that in your hand? It's the wings of a dove. Pashatas yadov v'nimtzu kanfeyona. And he opened up his hands, and the kanfeyona were actually in his hands. Leficha karnoso Elisha bal kanafayim. That's why they called him Elisha bal kanafayim. Right? They don't tell you how Elisha got a new pair of tefillin, because now he lost the first one because they turned into kanfeyona. So it was a great trick. But okay, maishna kanfeyona misharofos. Why kanfeyona as opposed to any other birds? Mishum de'imtil knesses yisrael yona, because the Jewish people are compared to a Yonah. Shenamra, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Kanfe Yonah Nechba Bakesef. My Yonah Knafeh Maginos Aleha. What's unique about the Yonah is it uses its wings to protect it, so it doesn't go and fight with its beak like most other birds. It uses its wings to protect it. So Af Yisrael Mitzvos Maginos Aleha. So to the Jewish people, our Knafayim, our wings, are our mitzvos, and the mitzvos serve to protect us. So this idea of Kanfe Yonah is used by the Achronim, the Rishonim rather, to explain Minag Yisrael, that every little detail sometimes in Yiddishkeit has a strong basis in the Makoros, and sometimes we don't even think of it. So how do we wrap our tefillin? So when we wrap the Shel Rosh, we wrap one strap on one side and the other strap on the other side of the bayis. Says the Ritva, that's Dafka. We wrap the tefillin in such a way that it should resemble two wings, that we put wings on each side of the batim in the way that we wrap our tefillin to, as a symbol of the Kanfeyona. He says that's Dafka by the Shel Rosh. By the Shel Yad, we do it in the Tzura of a Yud, one direction, then the other direction. But he says some people by the Shel Yad also do like Kanafayim, and that's quoted in the Magen Avraham in Hilchas Tefillin in Simin Chav Ches. So even though Schar Mitzvos by Al Maleka, Ben Yoyada points out, he was just trying to avoid being damaged as a result of these mitzvahs. So when we say that the mitzvahs meginos aleihen in this world, that's aside from the schar mitzvah, just doing a mitzvah. It's like shluchim mitzvah and nizakin, that while a person is doing a mitzvah, he's just naturally protected in this world. That's not considered the schar for his mitzvah. The schar for his mitzvah is going to be in a different world. This idea that tefillin require a guf naki is the basis for our practice of not wearing tefillin all day, not wearing tefillin at mincha, not wearing tefillin all day, because we assume that we're not able to keep a guf naki for such a long period of time. But for a short period of time that a person is davening, a person is able to keep a guf naki. Rav Shechter, when he davens each morning in the YU based medrash, so he obviously has his tefillin on for davening, and at least it used to be, I'm not there that early anymore. Well, now I'm not there at all, but I'm not there that early anymore, and it used to be when I was a bachur in the yeshiva, after davening, guys would line up and wait to ask questions, and the entire time he could sit there for an hour answering questions, he had his tefillin on, because he figured, I just davened, and now I'm talking and learning with everybody. So during such times, you don't have to worry that you're not going to have a guf naki. But after that, we don't trust ourselves to keep a guf naki all day, and that's why we don't wear tefillin all day. That's also why, even though women typically volunteer mitzvah saseh shazman grama, women are pata from lulav, and they're pata from sukkah, and they're pata from shofar, but women volunteer to do these mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Nevertheless, when it comes to tefillin, which is also a mitzvah shazman grama, the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch, women are not supposed to volunteer the mitzvah of tefillin, because tefillin are so highly sensitive that if you're not able to keep a guf naki, then yatzah scharo behefseido, you lose more than you gain. So when it comes to people who have a chiyuv to wear tefillin, we have to take that risk every day because we have no choice. We have a chiyuv. But if someone doesn't have an obligation to wear tefillin, the risk is simply not worth it. And that's why the Rama writes that women don't wear tefillin bizman hazeh. Or women never really wore tefillin. The only time we ever have on record that a woman wore tefillin was Michal Bas Shaul. So since the days of the Nevi'im, women never wore tefillin. But this could be the reason why, because the guf naki element is something to consider. That's also, by the way, just historically, that's the basis for the debate, one of the many debates between the Lubavitcher Rebbe and the Satmar Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe had one of his strongest campaigns that still goes, Ad Hayom Hazeh, is to put tefillin on as many Jews as you possibly can, right? If there's a Chabad shaliach or a Chabad person that sets up a tefillin booth, if you look Jewish, half Jewish, anything associated with Judaism, you could have a beard and payas, and they'll stop you and say, did you put on tefillin today? Right? They want to make sure that they're putting... So the Satmar Rebbe didn't like this at all. One of his objections, I think his primary objection was that he thought that you're going to tell people you do a mitzvah and that will just calm their spiritual guilt. And they'll feel like, okay, I'm from enough, now I can eat nevelis and treifas again. Whereas the Lubavitcher Rebbe's perspective was, no, get a Jew to do a mitzvah, and there's value in every mitzvah that you do. There's no like religious prerequisite to mitzvahs. Any mitzvah that you do has value to it. But one of the other arguments was that the Satmar Rebbe held, and this was in writing, the Satmar Rebbe made his arguments be known in Al Gula Val Tumura, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe responded in writing as well, that the Satmar Rebbe said that you're not going to be able to keep a guf. These people don't have a guf naki. They're thinking about all sorts. People who are not religious are thinking about all sorts of terrible things. They don't have a clean mind and they don't have a clean guf. So you can put on tefillin on someone who doesn't have a guf naki. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe says you have to recognize a spiritual moment for a spiritual moment, that whatever else a person does in their life, at that moment they're not thinking, they're just thinking about how does this work, right? They're not thinking about, or that I'm doing a mitzvah. They're not thinking about these other things. So that is, that he didn't think there was a concern of guf naki in those moments where the person was putting on tefillin. Okay, vaiter in the Gemara, b'nesor shel charashin. So he said that you're allowed to do atmana with the byproducts of the carpentry shop. So you buy, and then Rabbi Yehuda, and then we said, n'or shel pishtan, and Rabbi Yehuda said, daka, asr b'daka, but was matir b'gasa. So you buy, Rabbi Yehuda, n'sor shel charashin kai, oh, al shel pishtan, when Rabbi Yehuda distinguishes between daka and gasa, which case in the Mishnah is he talking about? The wood chips from the carpentry shop or the Na'or Shel Pishtan? So Tashma Gemara says, well, it's explicit in a brisa. Detanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Na'or Shel Pishtan daka hareu kezevel, that it's like zevel that's mosif hevel. Shema mina Na'or Shel Pishtan kai. So you see, Rabbi Yehuda clearly distinguishes between daka and gasa by Na'or Shel Pishtan. Shema mina, that in fact is a good raya. Next Mishnah, Tomnin. You're allowed to do atmana with animal hides that were skinned off of an animal because they are not mosif hevel. And as far as Hilchus Muksa is concerned, umetaltelnosan, you're allowed to be metaltel these shlachim on Shabbos, whether you did atmana with them or whether you didn't do atmana with them. They're not muksa. Why are they not muksa? Because you could use them as a something to sit on, as a mat to sit on. Begizet semer ve'in metaltelnosan, you're allowed to do atmana with wool shearings, but those are muksa. Those you're not allowed to be metaltel. Okay, well then ketzaduosa, how are you supposed to get your pot out of the insulation, if the insulation itself is muktzah? Whatever you do, you're going to try to move away the insulation, it's going to be a violation of tiltul muktzah. So no teles hakisui vehi noflos. You take the covering off of the pot, and then the insulation falls off on its own. So Rashi points out, you're allowed to take off the kisui even though some of the gizei tzemar are on top of the covering of the pot. But the kisui does not become a basis l'davar aser because the gizei tzemar aren't there for the kisui. They're there for the pot. That's the Ran says that kisui doesn't become a basis because the gizei tzemer are mishamish the kisui, and the kisui is not mishamish the gizei tzemer. A little different than Rashi. Rashi understood that it's nothing. The gizei tzemer have no relationship to the covering. They only have a relationship to the pot. The Ran says not about whether they have a relationship to the covering. They do have a relationship to the covering, but what direction does that relationship go? What is being mishamish? What? So when something, in order for something to become basis of davar aser, the basis has to be the tafel, and it has to be serving the davar aser. Over here, the davar aser is serving the basis. So that's the machlokas between Rashi and the Ran. The Rabbeinu Tam has a third explanation why it's not a basis. He says you don't have a din of a basis unless something is omed to stay that way the entire Shabbos. But obviously, if you're insulating, this was because you wanted a warm meal on Shabbos, so it wasn't meant to stay that way for the entire Shabbos. The Magen Avraham just points out that there's one detail that the Gemara doesn't make explicit, and that is that even if the Gizei Tzemer are covering the pot, they can't be entirely covering the pot, because you have to be able to access some part of the cover without moving away Gizei Tzemer. So if you have a pot with a handle that sticks out above, the Gizei Tzemer could be covering the whole cover of the pot, but the handle has to be sticking out, so you have something to pick up the covering of the pot with and to shake off the Gizei Tzemer. Rav Elazar ben Azariah Omer Kupa Matal Tzid Venotel. If you're doing Atmana inside a box, so the box is full of insulating material, and you have a pot inside of that insulating material in the box, so you lean over, you tilt over the box in order to move the insulation to one side, and then you take out the pot. Because if you just remove the pot, so the cavity that's left when you remove the pot is going to get filled in by the surrounding insulation, and then you're not going to be able to put it back. The Chacham say you can take the pot out and put it back in the spot that it was, and we're not choshesh that the cavity is going to be filled with the surrounding Gizei Tzemer. The Gemara is going to explain in tomorrow's daf that even the Chacham Ramoda, that if the cavity does get filled with the Gizei Tzemer, then you're stuck, meaning then you're not going to be allowed to put it back because you're not allowed to move the stuff out of the way in order to put the pot back in. Says the Gemara, Yosef Rabbi Yonasan ben Achinoiv, Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar. Two Rabbi Yonah's sons, who were not brothers, different fathers, were sitting together. V'yasa, and they had the same name. V'yasa Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama, and Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama Gabai was sitting by them. V'kami Bayilu. So the two Rabbi Yonah's sons had the following shayla. Shlachin shal balabayis tanan, aval shalumun kiven tekapid alayu lomataltinulu. When it says in our Mishnah that you're allowed to be matmin with animal hides, but they are not muktza. So when we say that animal hides are not muktza, does that mean only animal hides that are privately owned but are not meant for commercial purposes? But if the animal hides were meant for commercial purposes, so people would be very makbid that they not get ruined and you would never want to use them as a mat to sit on, and therefore they are muktza? Or maybe we're even saying that animal hides that are meant for retail, they're meant to be sold, even that is not going to be muktza. And certainly animal hides that are privately owned by a Baal HaBayis are not going to be muktza. So Amar Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar, Mistavra shel Baal HaBayis tanan, aval shel uman kapid alayhu. It's most mistavra that the only heter to say that it's not muktza is if it's privately owned. But if it belongs to an uman, then it's going to be aser because it's not omid liyeshiva. So Amar Rabbi Chanina bar Chama, so Rabbi Chanina bar Chama says, no, even uman you're allowed to, even shel uman you're allowed to move, you're allowed to be metaltel. Kacham Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, Abba Shal Chahava, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi says, my father, Rabbi Yossi, for a profession, he wasn't a rabbi. For a profession, he was a tanner. He worked with animal hides. Va'amar, he was thinking and learning the whole time, right? Well, it used to be that Jews, there used to be such a thing as a Jew who worked with his hands, right? Now, most of the time, most Jews have professions where we work with our heads, which has an advantage in that we're sharpening our minds all the time, but it has a disadvantage that you can't be thinking and learning while you're working. Rav Soloveitchik used to describe when he was growing up in in Chaslavich. There he had a Lubavitcher Melamed, and he said that that they didn't really have a yeshiva building. They had a room in the back of the carpentry shop, and there was a carpenter, a Jewish carpenter, that was working there all day. And he said he remembers hearing, as the fellow was working, he was reciting Tehillim the entire time as he was working. And sometimes he would time it where he would finish, you know, where he'd have an appropriate pasuk for the particular work that he was doing at that time. Like he'd put the Makabe Patish on a chair or something, or on a table, and kol neshama talalka. Like now we have everything is made together. So that used to be the way Rav Amital Zichron Levracha from Gush made this point, that it used to be that a Jew would worship with his mind, would serve the Ribbono Shalom with his mind, and would work with his hands. He says nowadays Jews typically work with their minds, and he thinks there's not enough worship with our minds. We don't apply our heads enough to serving the Ribbono Shalom. So we have to learn more and daven more. Okay, so he says, my father, Rabbi Yossi, was a shalcha. This counts as Davyomi coincidence. My wife's grandfather, who passed away yesterday, was a carpenter his entire life. He was a Jew who worked with his hands his entire life. So what did he do? He built sukkahs for the entire Detroit community. He built it well into his 80s. He was still building sukkahs for the entire community and things of that nature. So anyway, and shtenders and everything. So Abba Shalcha Hava. Abba was a, my father Rabbi Yossi, he says, was a tanner. So Amar, he viewed Shalchan v'nei shevalein. And even though he was a tanner as a profession, so he was an Uman, he would still say, bring some mats so I could sit on them. So Meisvei, so they ask on Rabbi Chanin Bar Chama, says in the Braisa, Nisarin shal balabayis metaltel nosan, v'shal Uman ein metaltel nosan, that the Nisarin planks of wood that belong to an, that are made in a carpentry shop, you're not allowed to be metaltel them. V'imchishiv lasalein pas l'orchin, and if you have a machshava that you want to use it for some other thing, then bein kach metaltel them. If it has some other function, so then it's not going to be muktza. But don't you see that something that belongs to an uman, typically we assume that they're makbid not to use it for anything else, and therefore it should be muktza? So shouldn't the same thing apply that applies to nesarim also apply to the animal hides? Nah, shiny nesarim to kapitalayu. Each product is different. Nesarim is very makbid because they could become easily ruined, so they're muktza. But what's going to happen to the animal hide? It's not nearly as risky. That's what the Rishonim explained, that the nesarim, they can become warped. So you don't want to, they're thin slats of wood, they can easily become warped. So you don't want to use them for anything else, it will ruin his business. But nothing's going to happen to the animal hides anyway. So Tashma says, where we'll bring another raya. Oros bein avudin bein shein avudin muta l'taltalim de Shabbos. Whether you have tanned hides or untanned hides, you're allowed to be metaltalim in Shabbos. Lo amru avudin, we are only our mechalik between avudim and enim avudim, elulin tumma b'vad. Only when it comes to the halachos of tumma, that or is only mekabel tumma once it went through tanning process. So my love, lo shna shal balabayis, lo shna shal uman, doesn't that mean to say that it doesn't matter if it's shal balabayis or shal uman, the halacha is going to be the same? So don't you see that there's no extra hakpada when their hides that belong to an uman? Says, well, lo, shal balabayis. No, it's the whole Bryce is talking within hides of a balabayis. But ein achinami, an uman's hides are going to be different. They're going to be muktza. So the Gemara says, okay, well, let's follow that diuk through. Aval shaluman mai, ein metaltan. So you're telling me that a hide that belongs to an uman is going to be muktza, and if it belongs to a balabayis, it's not muktza. Well, ihachi, if that's the case, the Braisa is trying to distinguish between those hides that are muktza and those hides that aren't. And what did the Braisa come up with? That there's a difference between tanned hides and untanned hides. So that the whole difference between tanned hides and untanned hides has nothing to do with muktza. That's only as far as Kabbalah's tumma. Well, liflog listen b'diday. Let the Braisa say a chilik that you have between hides that are tanned and untanned, as far as tiltal muktzah is concerned. Because the Braisa holds that you're not allowed to be metaltel, oros mubadim, if they belong to an uman. So you could have had a chilik even within dine muktzah, between tanned and untanned hides. Why do you have to say, oh, that chilik only exists in tumah tahara? No, it exists even in dine muktzah, if it's an uman's tanned hides versus untanned hides. So why do you have to bring up tumah in a braisa? It's about Shabbos. So it says more about medvar memur b'shal balabayis of the shaluman lo. We could have made that chilik that balabayis hides. You're allowed to be metaltel even if they're tanned, but an uman's hides you're not allowed to be metaltel if they're tanned. Says more kula b'balabayis kamari. Now the brayso wanted to keep the entire discussion to be about the hides of a balabayis. So says more this issue between Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar and Rabbi Chanina bar Chama whether oros shal uman are muktza or not kitanoi is really machlokas tanoim. Oros shal balabayis metaltel no son v'shal uman ain metaltel no son. You can be metaltel the hides of a balabayis, but not that of an uman. Rabbi Yossi Yomer echad ze v'echad ze metaltel no son. Either one you're able to be metaltel. They're not going to be a muktza, and that is aligned with Rabbi Chanina bar Chama's shita. The Shlach Kadosh points out that in general, when we say Kitanoi, the Shlach Kadosh has klalim of Torah Shebal Peh, so he has klalim of Lashonos Hasugyus. So he says when we say Kitanoi, in general, it's difficult to say that we're taking Machlokas Amorayim and saying, oh, they're just talking about the same exact thing that the Tanayim argued about. Why would they do that? They should just say Halacha Ki, right? Meaning, I'm not going to have an argument with my friend in a Machlokas Ramoshan of Shlomo Zalman. I'll just say, I hold like Ramosha, and he'll say he holds like Rav Shlomo Zalman or whatever, right? Why would you just say Halacha Ketana Ploni? Don't say the din as if it's your own din. So he says that that's why the derech of the Gemara is to ask an Amorayim that look like they're against Tanayim. We'll always say Lema Ketanoi, but it's only as a last choice when we have no other option of how to explain the Machlokas. Only then do we say Kitanai, meaning instead of saying, you might think that, oh, you have a brisa against one of these Amoraim, and therefore you're going to want to say, Lema Kitanai is always a question, that you, the Amora, are going against Tanaim, and you're not allowed to go against Tanaim. So Kitanai is a way of resolving that question. That, no, this is already a pre-existing Machlokas Tanaim, but it's always a last ditch. It's always when there's no other way to explain the Machlokas Amoraim, because we'd rather not say that they're arguing in the same Machlokas that a previous generation already argued about. Hadur Yasfi, the story continues, the same Chachamim, Rabbi Yonasan ben Achinoi, and Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar, and Rabbi Chanina bar Chama were all sitting together, the Kami Bailu, and the two Rabbi Yonasans raised the following Shaila. Hadur Tnan, the mission that appears later on in the Masechta, probably the most famous Mishnah in the Masechta that lists off the 39 Malachas of Shabbos, the Mishnah tells us Avos Malachas Arboim Chasarachas. Okay, connected me. What does that number correspond to? Why is it Arboim Chasarachas? There are lots of Malachas that are very, very similar to each other, and to categorize Dafka 39 categories was clearly done by Kavana, right? Meaning, who decided that Zora, Borer, and Merakade are three separate malachos? They all pretty much mean the same thing, right? It's very difficult to distinguish between Zora, Borer, and Merakade. So obviously, there was a number that they had in mind, and there were reasons that they Dafka wanted to get to 39 avos malachos. So that's how Rashi understands the Gemara's. Rashi and Tosfos understand the Gemara's question. Pnei Yeshua is a little different. Pnei Yeshua says that what we're really asking is, why does the Mishnah call it Arboim Chasarachas? There's a perfectly good way in Hebrew to say 39. Shloshim v'teisha, right? Why Arboim Chasarachas? So that's not going to be addressed immediately in the Gemara. That's going to be addressed a little bit later in the Gemara. So the Gemara wants to keneged me. So Amar Luhu Rabbi Chanina bar Chama. Rabbi Chanina said keneged avodos haMishkan. It's keneged to the corresponds to the avodos of the Mishkan to tell us that the malachos that they did in the hakamas haMishkan are the malachos that are asur on Shabbos. So the Eglei Tal in his Psicha to his Sefer, Eglei Tal is called Eglei Tal. Tal is Lamites because it was meant to be a Sefer on all Lamites Malachos. He didn't finish. He never got through all Lamites Malachos, but the name of the Sefer is still Eglei Tal. So in the Eglei Tal, he points out that it's Machlokas Rishonim. What that means that it relates to the Avodos HaMishkan. Avodos of what in the Mishkan? So the Meiri writes that the Malachos of Shabbos are derived from the Malachos of Hakamas HaMishkan, not the Malachos in the actual day-to-day functioning of the Mishkan, the Malachos that were necessary to build the Mishkan. And the Eglei Tal thinks that's Shitas Rashi as well. But Chuvas Rav Haigon suggests that all the Malachos of Pas, the Malach of Choresh, the Malach of Ofa, were all in the Mishkan as far as the Karbonos of the Mishkan. The Karbon Tamid requires an Asirus Ha'efa of Solas. So the Eglei Tal says clearly he's understanding that these are the Malachos of the Karbonos, not only the Malachos halachos of the hakamas hamishkan. So that seems to be a machlokas rishonim that the Eglei Tal points out. So Amar Rabbi Yonasan Rabbi Lazar, kacham Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi ben Lekonya. That the malachas of the number 39 relates to the number of times the Torah uses the word malacha, malachto, or meleches. When you add it all up, it's 39, and that's how we came up with 39 malachos of Shabbos, arbaim chasarachas, because that comes out to exactly 39. Now there's one little problem, and that is that it's not even anywhere near 39. It's well into the 60s. It's like 65 different places where malachto, malacha. So obviously some of them count and some of them don't count. So the Gemara is going to explain one of the struggles of whether the appearance of that word should count, but Mestama, the Gemara is just giving an example. There must have been other examples, many other examples, dozens of other examples of Malacha, Malachas, Malachto, that for some reason or another don't count into this Cheshbin. So by Rav Yosef raised the following Shaila. Vayavo Abaisa Lasos Malachto. Yosef comes to Potiphar's house. Pasuk says he came to the house, Lasos Malachto. Miminyanahu? Alo, does that count as one of the 39 mentions in the Torah? Why don't you go bring a Sefer Torah? We'll count and we'll see. If there are 38 others, then yes, it counts. If there are 39 others, then it doesn't count. So Milo Amar Rabba Bar Bchana Amar Rabbi Yochanan Lo Zaz Misham Atshevu Sefer Torah Menoim. Don't we have already a precedent for this, that they brought a Sefer Torah in order to count? That's the Sugya in Kiddushin Daf Lamed, where the Gemara over there tells us that they had to count the letters of the Torah, because the Gemara says that the Vav de Gachon is Chatzi Osios Shabbatorah, that the Vav in the word Gachon is half of the letters of the Torah. So the Gemara raised the question, yeah, but is it the last letter of the first half of the Torah, or the first half of the first letter of the second half of the Torah? Apparently they knew that there was not an odd number of letters in the Torah, that there was a given, that there were an even number of letters in the Torah. So when you say that something is the midpoint, it's between letters. The midpoint is really between letters. So they said Vav de Gachon. So the Gemara said, okay, bring a Sefer Torah, we'll count the letters, and we'll see. And that's why the Gemara says, L'fichach nikra rishonim sofrim. The early generations were called sofrim because they actually counted. They sat there counting words and counting letters in the Torah. So Amar Leih, enough computers. So Amar Leih, ki kam esafkali mishum dechsiva melachay sadayim miminyanahu vahakamandiyam lasos trachav nichnas. He said, no, you're not understanding my suffix. My suffix is it because by the melach samishkan, at the end of the melach samishkan, the pasuk says vahamelachay sadayim. Does that one count as the one of the 39, which would then mean that the one by Yosef is extra, and therefore it can't mean actual malacha? Now, what does it mean that he was coming to do his malacha? It really means, as Rashi Achumish quotes, he was coming to have tashmish with Eishes Potiphar, that he was planning on finally giving in to her advances on that day. And it was only, as the Gemara in Sota says, when he saw Demus Diukno Shalaviv, that he refrained from being with her. Odilma Vayava Abay Salasas Malachto Miminyanu. Or maybe the pasuk by Yosef actually does count toward the number of the 39 places in the Torah where it appears. V'haiva malacha isadayim, and the pasuk v'malacha isadayim doesn't mean that they had finished doing the malacha achikamar deshalom le'avidita. It means that they finished the malacha of bringing the nedavos, but then they didn't have anything more to bring. But not that v'malacha isadayim, that it relates to an actual malacha. Meaning the alternative explanation is that v'malacha isadayim means that they did each malacha in proper measure. They weaved just the right amount of weaving that was necessary. No more, no less. And that's what Vamalacha Esadayim would mean if it relates to malacha itself. But if the malacha by Yosef relates to malacha, then over here Vamalacha Esadayim must just mean the donations. That there were enough donations, they didn't need to solicit any further donations for the Mishkan. So Gemara says, Teku, we leave this Shaila unresolved. There is a Machlokas Rishonim in general. When the Gemara raises a Shaila and leaves it with a Teku, does it have to have a Nafkamina LaHalacha? Meaning, does it have to make a difference in our lives? Okay, there are 39 Avos Malachs of Shabbos. We know what they are. What difference does it make? Which one of these relates to the 39 Malachs of Shabbos? Rashi, Maseches Chulin, and Daf Yud Zayin writes that the Gemara will even raise such a question by something that's not Halacha L'maisa, and even something that's Maida Hava Hava, something that already happened historically. And he says, Drosha Kabel Schar, just like we learned the Parsha Ben Sora Mori, even though Ben Sora Mori never happened, never will happen, Drosha Kabel Schar. Whereas the Rush disagrees, and the Rush says no. The Gemara is not just stam schmoozing. The Gemara is raising question. When it raises a question, it leaves it as a teku. It means that there's a nafkamina la halacha. Over here, it's an obvious nafkamina la halacha because we have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and the mitzvah of Talmud Torah requires us to understand each word in the Chumash. So we need to know when it says that Yosef came to lasos malachto. What does that mean? Just to teach the words. That's enough of a nafkamina la halacha. Probably you don't need more of a nafkamina. Although the Achronim come up with some very creative nafkaminas la halacha over here. So Tanya, command the Yomer Kenegan Avodas HaMishkan. Tanya, there's a brisa that says that it relates to the Avodas HaMishkan. Tanya, in chayav nela malacha shekiyotzi ba haisa b'mishkan. That you're only chayav nela malacha Shabbos when you had something similar that was done in the Mishkan. Heim zaru, they planted, so vatem lo tizru, we're not allowed to plant. Heim katsru, vatem lo tixru, so they harvested, and therefore we're not allowed to harvest. The Achronim point out that in HaKamas HaMishkan, it was in the Midbar, and so the Rishonim point out already, Tosus writes that in Maseches Chulin, that there, nothing grows in the Midbar, it's in Eretz Lo Zarua, but when Bnei Yisrael were in the Midbar, this is one of the miracles, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them enough water from the Be'er Shel Miriam, that the sand started producing. It's like Eretz Yisrael Bezman Hazeh, that the Jews have figured out how to make a Midbar produce the most beautiful peiros in the entire world. So that's why the HaKadosh Baruch Hu figured it out way before we figured it out in modern Israel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu figured it out for us in the Midbar. So these are the things that you're not allowed to do. Heim helu asakrashim, so mekarka la'agala, they lifted the boards from the ground up to the agala, v'atem lo technisim Rosh Hashram Rosh Hashiachin, and therefore we're not allowed to bring things from Rosh Hashram to Rosh Hashiachin. Heim oridu asakrashim me'agala l'karka, they took the boards down from the agala to the karka, v'atem lo totim Rosh Hashiachin Rosh Hashram, so we're not allowed to take things from Rosh Hashiachin to Rosh Hashram. Some Rishonim actually count those as two separate avos malachos, hotza'a and achnasa. Heim otziyum me'agala l'agala, v'atem lo totim Rosh Hashiachin Rosh Hashiachin. They carried the boards from one wagon to another, so we're not allowed to go from one Rosh Hashiach to another. Says Gemara, Rosh Hashiach, Rosh Hashiach, my covenant. What do you mean? Of course you are. You're allowed to go from one Rosh Hashiach to carry something from one Rosh Hashiach to another. Sabai, Rav, Dami, Tavai, Vitem, Ravad, Barava, Mir Rosh Hashiach, Rosh Hashiach, Derech, Rosh Hashiach. That's what we're not allowed to do. When there's a Rosh Hashiach, Be'emtza, we're not allowed to carry something from one Rosh Hashiach to another Rosh Hashiach. So everyone should have a good Mechidesh, have a wonderful day, a good Shabbos. Again, no Shir tomorrow because it's Shabbos, but Be'ez Hashem, on Sunday, we'll probably pick up from the Mishnah on the top of Daf Nun Aleph Amid Aleph. It just seems like a more logical starting point than anything else. So we'll try to get up to there and pick up on Daf Nun Aleph from the Mishnah on the top of the page. A good Shabbos and a good Mechidesh.
Good Shabbos. Thank you.